Our next presentation will be given by Madame Lisa Court de l'École de Services Social, Projet de Perfectionnement Professionnel. Estelle, you want to introduce her?
I'd just like to say a word before I turn this over to Lisa, that professional development has been part of Measure 2 from the onset. And we've had a couple of little forays into the area. And then we decided that we really needed to have to start from the beginning and do some needs assessments around what do English-speaking professionals in the regions want in the area of professional development. So we've had Lisa working on a school of social work project. We've had Michael Udy, who's also been working on another project, really to get a sense of what people want. And if you look in your folder, Lisa's going to reinforce that, you will see that we really want feedback from you. We see this as an important opportunity to get feedback. So I just wanted to kind of locate the professional development within our measure. So I'll turn it over to Lisa.
So maybe I'll just start off by saying that me standing here offering a presentation is far too ambitious for what it is that I want to say. I wanted to thank Madame Persil and for including me in this opportunity. Can you hear me okay? Up. Okay, thank you. What I'm interested in is we're looking at professional development opportunities in relationship-based professions. I'm notably with the School of Social Work. Now, this is presenting some unique challenges, and it's also an area of great interest. What I wanted to just do here today, I know we're stopping for a break, is to invite you. I don't think it's in your package, but at the front registration, there's a small form really asking for some basic information from you. And if I would invite you to fill this out or to meet with me during the break, spend a couple of minutes, so that I have a chance to hear from you directly about identified needs for professional development with the clinicians that you are working with, who offer services to clientele who seek, services in English. I'm very interested in any brainstorming. It sounds like it's been a lot of information to hear about the volume and the depth of the projects that have gone on. Where, as Estelle said, I've been at a grassroots position so far on this area, but if I could really invite you to just spend 2 minutes to be able to share some information with me, I think it could be interesting so that we could really have a solid basis to develop more of these learning opportunities. That has to do with really, it is connected to Measure 2 and the retention of staff who are clinically informed and enthusiastic about their work. Part of, I think, being a professional in a community, what invites people to stay is feeling a sense that their work has meaning and that they can be invested in their work. So if we can offer them opportunities for clinical discussions that are worthwhile and increased learning opportunities, I think it could be useful. That's all I have to say. Any questions? Yes.
Well, when you touch this subject, all of the establishments have... Please take a microphone.
I'm a delinquent. Okay, all these agencies have ongoing professional development within their programs. Mm-hmm. Okay? Each agency has its own color of professional development. For instance, take the intervention plan, which is part of the law. Mm-hmm. I work in youth protection. Mm-hmm. Montérégie has a format that they follow for intervention plan. Mm-hmm. If you cross the river to Batshaw, mm-hmm. they've just developed a new type of intervention plan based on a circle of courage. Mm-hmm. They think their intervention plan is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Montérégie thinks their intervention plan is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to come in mm-hmm. and you're going to say, those of you who are English, we have some fantastic training for you. Okay? I think you need to integrate what could be offered into the system so it doesn't work against it. Because mm-hmm. up on high, for instance, if in Saint Genès Montérégie, mediation is a bug word, they want everyone trained in mediation. So mm-hmm. if one individual employee comes in and wants to learn a certain technique, he may get frustrated because he'll say, I want training through McGill for this, but the establishment's put a lot of money into something else. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how it fits in, mm-hmm. but you're going into systems that already have plans. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to say it's great, but at the same time, you got to be careful because people can start shutting the door mm-hmm. by saying, this is getting too complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, because our English employees are going to get this training mm-hmm. and all of our employees are getting that training. And which training do we want people to follow?
Mm-hmm.
That's I can certainly
appreciate there's a volume of training available and there are legal mandates and certainly there's the same kind of an IP form, you know, the same model that's attuned a bit differently in different organizations. I think, you know, from the School of Social Work, we have an interest in looking at getting information about from the professionals. What is it that they identify for themselves as being useful? You know, they may say, I want to learn about an IP form. Or they may say, how do I manage my client's anxiety when I'm placing their daughter? You know, a different kind of training. So I certainly appreciate that it is there's a complexity to offering different kinds of training and that there's only so many hours in the day that working professionals have to themselves. So, thank you. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
We are... Yes, Jim?
I realize this actually puts us ahead of time.
So yes.
Somebody may shoot me for this. But this measure of the McGill project in terms of professional support, there's another dimension to the activity. It's still in the very, very early stages, and while we still had at least 2 or 3 minutes on this subject, I wondered whether Mike Udy would at least share perhaps some of his preliminary observations. He's just come from a focus group activity in Abitibi.
Of course, with pleasure.
Hello, my name is Michael Udy. I worked for many, many years in Bacho Youth and Family Centers. Today I work as a trainer and a consultant. And as of this morning, I wasn't going to be speaking. But I have one or two things that I could add to the conversation that we're having about professional development. It's been part of the measure to try to understand the professional development, professional support needs of people working in institutions and with the English-speaking population. And it sounds simple to talk about it, but the more you start to look at what exactly does that mean, you realize it's a bit more complicated. So there's two aspects I'd like to comment on, because I can't talk to you about a finished product. I can talk to you about the start of a product. First of all, there's the dimension that was involved in the exchange between Lisa and Michael, which I would sort of situate as the difference between offering supports directly to individuals who determine their own individual interests and needs, as opposed to the needs of organizations which are trying to assure that their personnel have a particular type of information or skills and knowledge and so on. And it's true that all of the organizations, all of the public establishments determine their plan of training, which is based on the skills that they want to impart to their staff. And it's also true that individuals who work in those organizations might want other things which are not going to be met by the organization's training plan because the resources are not unlimited and the time available is not unlimited. The interest of an organization like McGill and some other schools has to kind of situate itself between, does it try to hook up and assist institutions in what they offer to their staff, or does it address itself more to individuals and individual professions, for example, people who are members of the Order of Social Workers, and try to respond directly to them? So that, because what you would offer in one or the other context, it would be different. And so that's kind of one issue that you have to sift out. Now, there's a second set of issues which I've been working on and was working on yesterday. I'm happy to report to you that the temperature in Rua Naranda yesterday was 23 degrees. I don't think anybody there has ever seen 23 degrees on the 20th of March. A sort of a second way of looking at the issue of offering support and development is it's a little bit different, and it goes as follows. And it starts from a kind of a presumption, which I'm coming to realize is only one presumption, and there are others that need to be examined. So when we talk about English-speaking professionals acquiring the tools of their profession, and then to what extent are they willing and able to go particularly off the island of Montreal and into public establishments or into private practice elsewhere in the province and work in employment environments and community environments that are much more French-speaking, much more Francophone. What's it like for people to do that? And what would help those people decide to do that or stay and do that? Because the extent to which English-speaking professionals engage themselves is the extent to which they make their services available to, among other people, the English-speaking population of the region. So it's in our interest, when we want to improve access, to examine conditions that would help people stay or help people want to go into regions, and because they are English-speaking, make themselves available. So we started with sort of from that premise of what are the needs of individuals who do that? So now we're not talking so much about training, but we're talking more about support in other ways, whether it's social, whether it's, well, we don't know exactly. This is why we're looking at the question. What kind of needs do you have as an English-speaking professional living in Sherbrooke or living in Jonquière or wherever it is that would help you and others be available? But the more that I've gone examined this, the more I realize there's a second reality that has to also be examined. Because if you consider across Quebec, who is giving services to English-speaking people who are asking for health and social services? Who's responding? Well, there are people whose background is English-speaking and they are responding. But I'm beginning to think, and I don't have numbers yet, that actually the majority of people who are responding are actually Francophones who are responding. But they have an ability in English, and they are undertaking this work. They are responding to these needs. And you look at the access plans, and who is it who's actually carrying out the work that's foreseen in the access plans? It's at least 50% being done by Francophones, if not more than 50%. Which leads to another question, which is, well, do they have support needs? What is it that would encourage them to continue doing this or to start doing this? And so we're starting to examine that too. And my visit to Abitibi-Temiskaming was in that direction. I met a total of 13 people in two different groups, only one of whom identified themselves as English-speaking, a social worker who was born in Niagara Falls. Everyone else has a background of being Quebecois and Francophone, and they have differing levels of English, and one way or another they have become sort of involved or identified, or some of them were telling me once you offer or once you get involved in giving services to English, you can't close the door. Everybody's going to, because you did it once, you're going to do it for your life. But we asked them, so what's that like? What's difficult about it? What's fun about it? Wanting to know their experiences. So I'll just give you two little scoops, but I'm not giving the results of this because we're just at the beginning of this, but just two themes that were clearly identified right off the bat. The first is that people who are giving services in English are often using materials and programs or tools, interventions that have been developed and documented in French. And often people find themselves explaining it in English, but they can't give any documentation in English. They can't give pamphlets in English. They can't give a tool, if it's a matter of a tool that you can use yourself. And so people said, well, it would really help us if we had access to the English versions of all of these things, so that when we're using them with English-speaking clients, patients, we're not giving them things and they're saying, well, I don't think I understand this, or they're not sure that their clients understand this. Now, ironically, in the last several months, I've also been involved in a project that in which we met what we intended to be sort of everyday typical English speakers in the province who were accessing health and social services in French and asked them, what's that like? And we heard about the exact same subject, that yes, they get services, but they can never get, or it's difficult to get documentation in English, or they don't know where to go. And suddenly yesterday it clicked. So the people who are asking for these kinds of things have difficulty getting the documentation, and the people who are giving services have the same difficulty. So two sides of the same coin, it seems to me. So this is striking me as an area in which support may be able to be given that will support those who are giving services in English to people who've requested in English, and where they currently don't have all the tools or all the material at hand that they would like to have. Did you follow my explanation? Because I didn't prepare anything for this. But is it clear what I'm okay? And the other subject that I heard about, but I know there are activities in Measure 1 that, and even in Measure 2 that respond to this, so I'm just kind of mulling over in my own mind, and I haven't talked to Mireille yet, so Mireille, don't panic. But I met a number of people who benefited from the French courses. So many people said, I took the French course. I took more than one French course. And they're talking about the courses that are supported by the project. English. I'm sorry. So Francophones who took the English courses. But they said, you know, it's actually not enough because, you know, only 20% of my patients or my clients are English speaking, so I don't actually get to use my English frequently enough, and I wish I could. I'm looking for an opportunity to, you know, to use it more. And I know there are such opportunities, so, but I'm just thinking, well, there's maybe some more matching, or I'm not sure exactly what the implications are, but there's an appetite. That's really what I'm reporting, is that people liked the fact that they could learn how to use English more in their work, but they need and would like to have additional opportunities to make that as part of their make them feel more at ease in doing it, which of course will increase access and increase retention. So in summary, what I wanted to say is that there's a dimension of responding to people's professional needs, whether it's through institutional programs or directly through individual learning interests. But there's another dimension of looking at other things that people need support about, whether they're English speaking or whether they're French speaking, when they are giving services to people who want to have them in English. So thank you for your attention.